Anyway, let me move right along. We've got our guest on the line, Dr. Ali Shahada. We're going to continue our discussion of Israel, Palestine, Hamas, the Middle East. This has been going on. We started the dialogue, the hostilities seem to be unending in that part of the world. Yesterday, we spoke to Professor Arquilla. He's an expert in defense in America. He weighed in on the conflict. The second half hour of the 9 a.m. hour was with Rabbi Greenbaum. Very articulate. We disagreed on some issues. Now we're going to have the view from an American Muslim, Dr. Ali Shahada. Dr. Ali, author of Demystifying Islam, Your Guide to the Most Misunderstood Religion of the 21st Century, and other books. Dr. Ali, a friend of the station. I consider you, by the way, doctor, a friend of mine. I called you a friend yesterday on the show. I don't know if you caught that in the replay, but we've just talked on the phone. But I think I get along better with people who I don't actually meet face to face. So maybe that's why we have such a good relationship. And good morning, sir.
You're a friend as well, Hal. Good morning to you, too.
Thank you. And thank you for calling in from Minneapolis.
From Minnesota right now. Actually, we're known in Minnesota today.
Yeah, what's the weather like there? You're a Floridian, so this must be quite a snowball to the face.
It's horrible. I think minus 10 degrees here right now. It's very difficult.
So you're not thinking of moving from Florida to Minnesota anytime soon?
Not yet. Not anytime soon.
Well, you have your medical practice, obviously, there in the Sunshine State. And obviously you like it down there. But we did want you to weigh in. Every now and then we do give you a call. You've been a great guest. What does it feel like for you to see the people of Gaza, 1.5 million people or so, clearly beset by enemies? I think I said that on the show yesterday. Israel, the main focus, obviously, of the people there, but they're not really getting much help from the rest of the world either.
I think they're getting a lot of moral support from the entire world, and that includes Muslims and non-Muslims, that includes Arabs and non-Arabs. There's been significant outrage, throughout a lot of media outlets, through South America, through Asia, through much of Europe. There have been a lot of governmental statements from even European nations discussing the outrage that they feel for what's going on right now. So I think I'm 100% with what I think the international community feels right now, which is absolute outrage that something like this could be happening in our day and age when we talk about peace and how we have to tolerate one another and all this, that something like this could be happening and that nobody's taking action.
Well, we spoke yesterday with the Rabbi Greenbaum here in Carmel. You listened to that interview on the podcast. And obviously you take issue with a number of things that the rabbi said. I want to get into the specifics, but before we get to some of the specifics, generally, the rabbi's main point, I think, is that Israel is under attack. The rockets are falling on Israeli soil. And yes, Israelis haven't been killed, or at least not in large numbers, by the rockets, but they are being attacked by Hamas in Palestine, and Israel needs to respond, and they are responding, according to the rabbi, in an appropriate fashion. That's a mouthful that I just said. I think that's the rabbi's point. Can you respond to that, most particularly that Hamas began the hostilities with the rocket launches?
One of the things I'd like to, before getting right to that, for the listeners, a lot of people in America, of course, are trying to understand the whole conflict. I mean, not just, this little part of it, but why have there been so many problems there? And one of the problems I feel is that when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict or the Israeli-Arab conflict, that a lot of people seem to pick a certain start point and try to understand everything from there. Like, for example, they'll say, okay, let's start in 1948, and try to understand the conflict, and that's really not going to work because you really have to start before that. You have to start before all these things happen, and that applies very much to today. Everybody wants to understand the rockets, but nobody wants to understand why the rockets are even an issue before. How come Hamas or any other government wants to have rockets, and why do they want to shoot them at Israel? And so there'll be some simplistic answers out there that, oh, because they want to annihilate Israel because they hate Jews or something, some simplistic answer like that. But the complexity of the matter is far greater. Getting to the actual issue, One of the things that's very frustrating is sitting and watching American news as opposed to watching all other forms of international news. I mean, every type. I mean, you look at European news, you look at Australian news, you look at Asian news, you look at Arab news, like Al Jazeera. The ceasefire, as we have, the last ceasefire between Hamas and Israel was signed in July. And the conditions of that ceasefire were very clear. There were three conditions. Number one, that Hamas would stop firing rockets. Number two, that Israel would stop attacking Hamas. It would not enter into Gaza in any way, shape, or form for hostilities. And number three, that they would open the blockades of humanitarian aid that are coming into Gaza. The problem with the ceasefire, and this is what you will find in a lot of international, again, non-Muslim, non-Arab, it's not, I'm not looking for bias here, they say that none of these things were kept by Israel. The actual killing part of the ceasefire was violated by Israel on November 4th. Hamas did not fire any rockets between July and December, I think it was 18th or 19th, when the ceasefire officially ended on paper. But on November 4th, Presidential Election Day here in the United States, that was the day that that Israel actually violated the peace, the ceasefire, by entering into Gaza and shooting. I think it was an air raid where they entered Gaza and they killed five people and injured several others. Now they say that there was some activity in tunnels or that they were, plotting something or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that they did enter and they did kill people. There was no diplomatic, attempts made at that time.
Well, let me just jump in real quick. There's certainly news reports that Israel did launch a raid against Gaza in right after the election. And I think we get into this back and forth where each side says the other started it, the other's responsible, and that has so far had no positive effect whatsoever. It's really just what I said to another listener on this to this station the other day is each side seems to take the point, if I get hit, I'm going to hit the other side back twice as hard, and obviously leaves them both bloodied, punch drunk, and ultimately wasted groups of people. What would you recommend to the people of Israel and to the government of Israel at this time to try to resolve the situation so that the attacks cease on both sides?
Well, I think that, as far as I can see it, and then again, I'm trying to look at it in the most unbiased sense possible, is that, Hamas was told to stop firing rockets for 6 months, and there is no international, and then again, in an attempt to be unbiased, I've looked in every possible news source. I looked through Israeli news, I looked through American news, I looked through European news, I looked through Al Jazeera. I don't find any report whatsoever that Hamas was firing any rockets in that six-month period of time. Before Hamas was even elected democratically by its own people, they shut off the suicide bombing thing, which I think is a very difficult thing to do because, suicide bombings have typically been, individual actions where somebody is frustrated, someone wants revenge, somebody is angered beyond belief, and they want to go do that. And so they actually shut that off for about an 18-month period. So that was one of Israel's earlier demands, is, you guys keep on doing the suicide bombings, we're never going to stop, hitting you back. So it seems like, Hamas has made the concessions that have been required of it on more than one occasion. And so why is it that Israel does not recognize them? Why is it that, they're democratically elected by their people, but right now Israel is obviously making an attempt to do a regime change. Of course, the United States, setting that precedent makes it a little difficult to, tell them, hey, you can't do that. But, I don't understand why they're not, why they're not allowed to come to the table when their people said, these people, this government or this group represents our interests best, and yet nobody wants to, seriously address them.
Well, I think that's a great point, Dr. Ali, and we did speak with a defense expert here in the United States yesterday, and he talked about the critical nature, how important it is to have negotiations, and it doesn't seem as though the Israeli government has any interest in the negotiations, which Egypt, which France have been trying to broker, and which Hamas, as I understand it, has been willing to become involved with.
Again, every time it seems that they've been asked to do something which has been rather difficult to do, stopping the rockets, again, because all it takes is just one person who gets their hands on one and shoots it to break that. But they've been able to stop the rockets for 6 months. They've been able to stop the suicide bombing. So they've shown themselves capable of controlling their people to a large degree. And again, if they're not going to show, and I think that's where a lot of people are saying, why are they doing the rockets anyways? And I think that was the question that the rabbi brought up yesterday. And when you look at it, you see what's going on. Like I said, they've done everything that's been asked of them. The blockades continued. Their people are literally starving in there. And the rabbi, brought up a point yesterday that I was very hurt by. I mean, I thought it was almost in a contemptuous way, and I didn't like it at all. He was talking about why should Israel feed, these people? Why doesn't Egypt feed them, for example? And it showed just a complete lack of knowledge on this area that, the Gazan people are not waiting for Israel to come in and feed them. They're not waiting for a handout from Israel. And the fact of the matter is that that's the United Nations, that's the Red Cross, that's humanitarian aid organizations, several humanitarian aid organizations who have got, hundreds of thousands, I think even millions of dollars of donated supplies, of donated food, donated medicines, things like that. They're just waiting to get into Gaza that they've already bought. They just cannot get in, and Israel's the one that's not letting them in. Now, why doesn't Egypt let them in is the question he asked yesterday. Is, again, what Egypt is trying to do is stay out of an international conflict. So when the ceasefire, the conditions of the ceasefire was the blockades would be opened and that those supplies would be allowed in, I'm not sure why another international, party should get into that. And so it's almost like there's a hadith or like a statement of the Prophet Muhammad in our religion in Islam that a woman, the Prophet said he saw a woman that had gone to hell because she had a cat that she kept trapped inside her house. She never fed the cat and she never allowed the cat to feed itself. And so when you look at the people of Gaza, I mean, what they say, you talk to people who are there, when you hear the news reports of people who are living there, they feel like they're living in a very large prison. They're not allowed to go out and work. They're not allowed to, nothing is allowed to come in, nothing is allowed to go out. And so what do we expect? I mean, they can't, dig underground and eat dirt, or I'm not sure what is expected of them.
Let me just jump in because we got to go to a quick break here. Dr. Sure. Ali joining us, Dr. Ali Shahada, his book, Demystifying Islam, Your Guide to the Most Misunderstood Religion of the 21st Century. And you can get that at Amazon. You can also check, and we always ask you first to go to Pilgrim's Way in Carmel, our wonderful sponsor here. That's our preference. That's our recommendation. We got to go to a break now, Ali, but on the other side, I want to address some of the specific statements made by Rabbi Greenbaum yesterday and your reaction to them. We'll be right back on the morning show. All right, back on the KRXA morning show. I actually saw Glenn Sadowski yesterday. He did a great job with the acupuncture. Really helped me relax, feel better. Thanks, Glenn. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the morning show. Right now, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Ali Shahada. He's a medical doctor in Florida. He's also an author, Demystifying Islam. We're talking about Palestine. We're talking about Israel. We're talking about Hamas. And Ali, very, very bad news coming out of Gaza today. I was hoping that things were kind of winding down a little bit. Latest news from the BBC, Israeli strikes 60 Gaza targets. You can see the smoke rising from Gaza City. It does appear that Israel is really intent. And believe me, as a Jewish person, this causes me great pain to see what my co-religionists are doing to Gaza. And I do have sympathy for the people of Israel. But to see what they are doing to other human beings is just, it's awful. And obviously, it's worse for the people who are really suffering are the Gazans. 90,000 people having to leave their homes yesterday, as a result of the reaction by Israel this morning. All right, let's address some of the points that the rabbi made yesterday. I wanted you to respond to them, Ali. First of all, he said that the interreligious relations in Israel are quite good. In other words, the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians all get along well within the borders of the state of Israel. Is that your understanding?
No, not at all. I mean, from everything that I read and from speaking to people who have lived there, that's certainly not the case. I mean, you look at, for example, what the Israeli Arabs, I mean, they've been marching and they've been demonstrating and they've been very unhappy with what's going on right now. And in terms of, even like you look at the attendance at mosques and things like that, that there's frequently there's going to be police blockades where they allow certain people to go pray and other people are not allowed. So the people, the Israeli Arabs themselves, do not feel. I would be confident in saying that they don't feel like they're treated on an equal basis as much as, let's say, an American would be.
All right. The rabbi also said that Israel gets along very well with Egypt, with Jordan. My understanding is that's largely true, and maybe that's part of the problem, is that Israel's neighbors, now that they have peace, they don't want any part of this, the injustice, what's going on in Gaza whatsoever, and that may be adding to the frustration that the Gazans are feeling at this time. Your reaction to that?
You're right. It is true that the governments of Jordan and the governments of Egypt are very are on good terms with the government of Israel, and now that does not reflect whatsoever the feelings of the people in this country. So, and that was very clear. It has been very clear several times at the Egyptian-Gazan border, where the people have just expressed absolute outrage. The people have been individually, like the Egyptian civilians, have been individually trying to figure out how they could get help and to the Gazan people. You look in the news reports, and you know, now in the age of the internet, where we don't have to look for a newspaper anymore, you can look for blogs, you can look for opinion, individual opinion. In that way, you can see that there's enormous amount of outrage and protests. There have been huge protests, and I know in Egypt regarding what's going on over there, and as well the Egyptian response. And one of the things I should express, that, that there's a lot of people in America are not familiar with, is the general dislike that the people in these countries have for their governments. They feel that their governments are not responsive to their concerns. They feel that their governments are, in a sense, puppet governments that do the bidding, or work for the interests of outside interests and not for their own. So, in general, even though the governments may have a good relationship, the people themselves are not pleased with what's going on right now.
All right, Dr. Ali, in the New York Times, say we've only got a couple more minutes, but there was a very, I think, fascinating article about the view within Israel itself. And although the rest of the world clearly sees Israel as the aggressor, Israelis view themselves as beset by enemies. They think their belief is that Iran is largely behind Hamas and that they are, in fact, confronted not with 1.5 million impoverished Gazans, but by 30 million relatively well-off Iranians who have a very powerful army. That's the perception there. Their perception is the rest of the world is anti-Semitic. Their perception is the rest of the world has no sympathy whatsoever for Israel. I can understand it. I don't fully share that viewpoint. I get that that's how they feel. And the peace community in Israel blames Hamas for, in their view, breaking the peace and destroying their work, which was to try to get Israelis behind the idea of taking the settlements back from the West Bank and really getting behind a two-state solution. My reaction to that is that what Hamas has done in Israel is exactly what Hamas wanted. Hamas wanted a response from the Israelis. Hamas wanted a disproportionate attack on Gaza because that united the Palestinians behind Hamas, just as now the Israelis are united behind the hardliners in that country.
Yeah, it's hard to say, and I'm not really sure because I've read a lot of different conflicting, online reports about exactly what the target, what the goal was of this. But from what I can see looking at the past 2 years, I mean, Hamas was elected in 2006, January 2006, so we're basically 3 years out now from that. And from the fact that they've actually been, continually doing a pretty significant effort in meeting the demands that have been put on them by Israel, I don't know that we can say that. What I can say is that, why the feeling of to heck with it, let's just launch the rockets, let's fight, is what they're seeing is that when you look at, for example, I told you about the 6 month ceasefire. If they're going to make the concessions, if they're going to do what's required of them, if they're going to make all this effort, they're going to stop their people, they're going to say, "Love, be patient, we can work this out." If they're willing to, they initially had talked about extending the ceasefire, and they were, initially, considering that. the whole idea of even having a ceasefire, the whole idea of recognizing, you know, the ability to have a two-state solution, which Hamas, I think, has been recently definitely more amenable to. What happens at a certain point is if you continue to negotiate with somebody and the other side never really wants to keep the keep the terms, you get to the point where you're like, well, what good is it then? You know, why should we? You know, so they see their people starving, they see the attacks continuing, they look at the West Bank and they see the settlements continuing, they see the
it's just causing the reaction in Palestine. I understand. We got to let you go, Ali. Thank you so much. Talk to you again soon, please.
It's 8:30.
That'll do it.